AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. Let's go big picture on today's show. Do the ag committees have their focus on the right issues? How committed is the Biden administration to biofuels, sustainability, global trade, conservation, and what should we expect from the UN's first food systems summit?
Live from Downturn Continuation News Day via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with former USDA Undersecretary Bill Northey. Then it's John Doggett, CEO of the National Corn Growers Association. And right after the news, Karen Bonert from Farm Journal's Milk. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now here's the host of AgriTalk, Chip Lorre.
All right, Davis. Hey, thank you so much, and welcome to AgriTalk. Glad that you are with us. Everything good your way, Davis?
Everything is great my way, good. Buddy. How about you?
Just fine, just fine. We got a little rain last night. That was kind of nice.
I took a nap. It was raining, and it was so relaxing and peaceful. Yeah. I fell asleep on the couch for a little while.
Wow.
Yeah.
That hit you in a hurry, didn't it?
It did. It came out of nowhere. Came out of nowhere.
Spontaneous napping by Davis Michelson.
Well, part of it, I was watching this show on Disney Plus with Jeremy Wade, where he's out catching the enormous scary fish. And it just, the combination just put me right out. It was too much water. I couldn't handle it.
Oh, man. Well, we're going to keep everybody awake for this AgriTalk. My gosh, Bill Northey. Let's get caught up with Bill, right?
It's been too long.
Yeah, find out what he's working on now and some of the projects that he is working on. And, of course, you know, we'll take a look and get his take on how the Vilsack USDA is handling issues. Okay. We'll get that. And then John Doggett, it's always good to talk with John. We'll catch up with John. And Karen Bonert is very excited because she's got a big event coming up here. It's just a week away now. So, okay, man, let's get to it. What you got in the news?
Well, let's start with some highlights from USDA's crop progress and condition update for the week ended September 19. Corn is 93% dented, 57% mature, 10% harvested, 59% good to excellent. Soybeans, 58% dropping leaves, 6% harvested, 58% good to excellent. Cotton, 48% bolls open, 9% harvested, 64% good to excellent. Winter wheat, 21% planted, 3% emerged. And I imagine your backyard looks a lot like mine. There's an awful lot of soybeans being picked, and right up until it started raining yesterday anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I get those, you know, the text messages of, my gosh, 10% moisture on these beans. How did that happen? Geez, here we are at 12%. Thought they would maybe be ready. So give them a look. you want to give them a look. No question about it.
Global stock markets were mostly higher in overnight trading. Stocks are recovering after yesterday's steep sell-off after concerns about China's property sector helped fuel a global sell-off in stocks and commodities. The head of China Evergrande Group said he expects the developer to emerge from its darkest moment, possibly with some assistance from the Chinese government, Chip.
Yeah, I would imagine with some assistance from the Chinese government. If you want to hear a really thoughtful conversation about what is happening in China right now, listen to yesterday afternoon's AgriTalk and the conversation that we had in the first segment with Kent Beadle from AgSurion. I went back and listened to it again last night, and it was very thought out. It's a really good conversation with what I think is the right perspective on the situation.
Well, Chip, European ammonia manufacturers are trimming production output in the face of sharply higher natural gas prices. Norway's Yara announced Friday that it would be curtailing production just days after CF Industries said it would reduce output from two of its British facilities. And now word has since surfaced that a major Ukrainian ammonia producer will halt production entirely beginning tomorrow. citing high input costs and low relative returns on ammonia and urea. This is not good.
No, I know how to get them to make more.
Yeah?
Pay more for the ammonia. That's what it's going to be. That's how we're going to get them to make more. Yeah. That's the bottom line.
Inflation will continue to rise over the next 2 years, according to a revised projection by the OECD, which expects price increases to be significantly higher in 2021 and in 2022 than it had previously forecast for most G20 nations. Lawrence Boone, OECD chief economist, said managing inflation would be, quote, a very difficult balancing act for policymakers.
I don't know what the policymakers expected when they started demanding increases in those minimum wages out there. Mm-hmm. It's not like those are the money flows through the system. And if there's more money to flow through the system, more money will flow through the system.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
that's all we're really facilitating. It's not going to change a whole lot.
Well, House Democrats will combine a short-term government spending bill through December 3 with a suspension of the debt limit. That's a package to hit the floor this week, Speaker Nancy Pelosi announced Monday. In a joint statement with Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, Pelosi said they will suspend the debt limit until the end of 2022. Despite repeated warnings that GOP senators will not go along with the linkage, Pelosi is daring Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell to sink the package and risk a government shutdown on October 1. Chip.
Wow. Playing a pretty dangerous game. I know that we missed a couple of shipping items that you had in the news. We'll try to get back to those at the end of the show today, okay?
Standing by.
All right. Good stuff. Thank you so much, Davis. Let's bring in Karen Bonert. She is the editor of Farm Journal's Milk. Karen, you're only a week away, right?
I know. Ready or not, 1 week away, Chip. So the air, it's turned crisp up here in the Midwest. The cattle are starting to arrive later this week into Madison. And after a year off due to COVID-19, the dairy world, yes, has anxiously awaited this reunion, World Dairy Expo 2021. So there's lots of new things that they'll get to see, including a sunset celebration, kind of as we celebrate this reunion. It's a free concert on Friday, October 1st. The headliner is Dylan Carmichael, a Nashville country music artist. But even more so, the Career Connections is really exciting. It introduces businesses and farms to students and young professionals looking for a job. Hello, who doesn't want to find those people? Free registration for participating companies, farms, and students is required, though. So go to worlddairyexpo.com to learn more before you go there. Education, it's always been a central focus of Expo. This year, it's of no exception. We have Expo Español presented in Spanish for dairy owners, managers, and mid-managers.
Okay.
Chip, we're excited to have the U.S. Farm Report with our host, Tyne Morgan, go live on Thursday, September 30th from 8 to 9. The show will have a panel of experts focused on markets, industry, and trends. But what we just want everybody to do is make their way to Madison for World Dairy Expo. It's from international cow shows and sales to virtual farm tours, seminars, a huge hall of exhibitors. Everyone walks away tired, of course, but inspired nonetheless.
Yeah,
so I'll
absolutely.
Be there all week, and I'm excited. I'm excited. I hope to see everyone there.
That's really excited. You know, I'm interested in getting your take on the Career Connections when you get back, Karen, because I think that's a really nice addition to what's going on up there. Good stuff. We'll talk to you later, okay?
All right. Thanks, Chip.
You bet. That is Karen Bonert, editor of Farm Journal's Milk. Coming up next, we've got a conversation with former USDA Undersecretary Bill Northey right here on AgriTalk. Joining me is Dr. Roy Brister, PhD. He is the Director of Nutrition at Tyson Foods. Dr. Brister, how important is soybean meal in the diet of poultry?
Well, soybean meal is our gold standard that we measure everything against. And what we like about soybean meal is the fact that it's available and it's fairly consistent. When we look at it, it ranges in protein from 45 to 48, but typically within a plant, it's very consistent. So it's a consistent source of protein. The digestibility is excellent. The balance of amino acids is probably better than any other protein source we have out there.
Okay, as a large animal producer, one of your top nutritional needs is amino acids provided by the proteins. Why is it important to look at protein content in a load of soybeans?
Me and my team are always looking at the protein levels in these soybean meals that we get from all these sources and try to help our purchasing group understand what is the best price per unit of protein.
Dr. Brister, are you seeing a range of protein content? And I mean, how big of a deal is 1 or 2 percentage points?
For the last 3 months, proteins range anywhere from a 45.5 to about a 48% protein. If you just were looking at buying a ton of soybean meal, and you could buy a ton of 45% protein soybean meal or a ton of 48% protein, that 3%, that's 60 pounds of protein. You know, and a lot of times we pay for it based on a ton, but if you put that on a per unit of protein basis and you've got to haul 2,000 pounds, I'd rather haul 2,000 pounds of 48% than 2,000 pounds of 45%, just from a sustainability. And I'd have to haul a lot more of the 45. So when you start looking at costs, those small percentages add up.
Excellent. Thank you, Dr. Brister. That is Dr. Roy Brister, Director of Nutrition at Tyson Foods. For more information on how U.S. soybeans provide protein for animal agriculture, visit soymeal.org. Brought to you by the Soy Checkoff.
Never miss a story. Text NEWS to 31313 to have today's top stories delivered to your phone.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Laurie. Davis, I am really looking forward to this, so let's go ahead and jump right into it. Joining us now is former Iowa Ag Secretary and former USDA Undersecretary for Farm Production and Conservation and a farmer up in the Spirit Lake, Iowa area, Bill Northey. Bill, welcome back to AgriTalk. How are you?
I am great, Chip. Great to be with you.
I'm glad that you are here. How are things looking up there in Northwest Iowa?
You know, it's certainly getting ready for harvest. There's a little bit that's starting to come out. Everything was a little dry, of course, but like I hear every place else, you know, it looks better than it should for as much water as we got.
Crazy. Crazy. The genetics that we're putting out there in the field and the management that we're putting on it. I mean, when you got $5.50 corn at planting time or, you know, whatever it was, you're going to do everything that you can to grow every possible bushel out there. So I don't think we should be surprised that it's doing better than what it should have with the weather. So it's happening. It's happening. Yeah. I want to talk a little bit about the Build Back Better plan, the reconciliation bill. I know that the tax issues that concerned farm groups and farmers were left out of the House plan. But when we're talking about a $3.5 trillion bill, I'm not sure that anybody can tell us what's really in and what's really not in this bill, can they?
I sure don't see how they can, Chip. It's just a massive bill. You know, you think of farm bills when we spend an awful lot of time talking about a few $100 million, like that's not a lot of money. It is. And in this case, we're talking billions, tens, hundreds of billions, obviously even trillions. You know that folks just move a decimal point one way or the other. And
yeah.
Without an understanding of what the impact is actually going to be to the program.
Right. You know, as the reconciliation bill made its way through the House Ag Committee for markup, it was shocking to understand and to realize that this one bill is bigger than the farm bill, and it went through on partisan, you know, in a reconciliation bill. Bill, I just don't know if we're heading in the right direction with farm policy in the country based on the way this is working.
Well, I hope the process here is what it is, not necessarily by design of the ag folks. I hope it's a temporary situation in ag. Obviously, we can have bipartisan legislation come out of the ag committee, often do. In this case, I don't even know that actually many of the majority members, the Democratic members, got to see what was in it or were a part of deciding what was going to be in it. There certainly weren't amendments that were able to be offered. And in many cases, there are even pieces of the bill that weren't very defined. So,
right.
Okay. So it's not a bipartisan process. In some ways, it's not even an inclusive process for the majority.
Bill, on the conservation side, they decided, well, you know what? We'll just add that in later. It's like $28 billion. It's unbelievable that they would take that approach, isn't it?
It really is. And certainly many of us are very interested in some more support for conservation. It's very important to be able to have, and certainly if we're going to ask folks to do the kinds of things that we'd like to be able to have them do, and that's address some of the climate change, carbon, the water quality work, other kinds of things. We need some more resources. We need some more people. But this is a tough way to get it. And in fact, I don't even know what we're getting. And no one knows what we're getting exactly, whether there'll be policy implications. And certainly I don't think we know whether it will be, you know, a few billion or lots of billions.
Right. And unfortunately, it seems to be linked to the physical infrastructure bill that even though it's $1.2 trillion and huge, 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 it does seem to contain some of the things that I know that you've worked to include in an infrastructure bill in the past, right?
It really does. There's a lot of pieces there. Of course, there's a lot of pieces there. But there's a lot of pieces there that ag is interested in, whether it's broadband or fixing roads and bridges, certainly locks and dams. There's a lot of pieces. But there's a lot of other things that ag at best shrugs its shoulders at, and at worst saying why. Should that be a part of it, even in the base infrastructure bill? Now, it is a lot closer to what infrastructure is.
Yeah.
And I guess you never get everything you want. You always get something else. And so that's why there certainly are folks that are split on that bill. When you look at some of the other things in the other bill, that is a bridge too far for most.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. You mentioned bipartisan legislation coming out of the House Ag Committee. The last time that we saw anything that really kind of resembled bipartisan legislation, your new partner, Colin Peterson, was in charge of the House Ag Committee. What is the Midwest Council on Agriculture? Tell us about it.
Yeah, so it's looking at a group of gathering a group of farm ag companies, ag businesses, there'll likely be farm groups as well, and looking at kind of a Midwestern perspective on ag policy. So obviously we're headed into a farm bill, and so you want to make sure that the things you're talking about, whether it's crop insurance or conservation programs, now as we talk about sustainability and carbon programs, that there is an understanding of the impact on those in the Midwest. There's a great group out of the Southwest called the Southwest Council on Agribusiness. And they do a great job. Both the chairman and I had them come into our offices many times. It was a great service to have them kind of tell you what a region-wide cross-industry, cross-commodity kind of focus was. Still underneath that, there's still commodities and others that are out there that are focusing and working, and they're working with their national organization. But I think this supplements that in a way that makes it easy, especially for the non-ag legislators that are saying, tell me what I should do. And I want some summary to all the different points of view, and hopefully this will have that opportunity to be able to bring some of that summary and that Midwestern point of view.
Okay, very cool. I mean, what you're talking about is bringing some ground truthing into the process, right?
It really is, and
yeah.
and certainly providing some other opportunities for folks to get engaged in policy that maybe don't now feel like they can as well. So I do think that there's lots of opportunity. Democracy works when people engage. We need to be able to help that.
Okay. How do you feel the cattle market transparency issue is moving along. Are we any closer to finding a legislative remedy to some of the things that the stakeholders in the industry don't like?
You know, I would hope that we are. I think there's some discussion. I think it's a major effort to get to the place where there's honest, hard conversations about it. That's taken decades to get there. Obviously, there's still different points of view. Midwestern folks want to be able to operate in that negotiated market to a lot greater degree, or the spot market to a lot greater degree. And I don't think we have a conclusion anywhere near yet, but we're getting closer. And I think some of the things that the industry is looking at and trying to understand what the state is and how much do we know about what is actually traded is a good step forward. Now, it hasn't got us a solution, but it's certainly getting us closer to understanding the problem and the situation and whether we're making progress.
Okay, I've only got about 30 seconds left, but I got to ask you about WH Northey LLC. What is that?
So it's a consulting group that just myself out of my home office that doing some speaking and sitting on some boards and doing some consulting. A lot of it around conservation and sustainability, all of it ag. And so it's been fun to be able to get myself out and see some of the things that are going on and try and help.
Okay. Do me a favor. Let's stay in touch on the conservation issues here, Bill, because we need your insights and your thoughts on the direction that the country is taking on conservation issues. All right.
Appreciate it, Chip. Thank you.
You bet. That is former Iowa Ag Secretary and former USDA Undersecretary for Farm Production and Conservation, Bill Northey. We've got John Doggett from NCGA next.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Joining us now, Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Beige, corn, and wheat really still on the defensive this morning.
Yeah, you know, we don't have the outside market pressure coming from the stock market that we did yesterday. So some of that fear-based, broad-based sell-off isn't necessarily the cause of the pressure today. But commodities as a whole are down, and down rather significantly. So that is having an impact on the corn and wheat markets. And like you mentioned, double-digit losses across the wheat complex pretty much. And then the corn market, it's trading near session lows here at mid-morning. So, you know, just pretty negative price action there in both those markets. Soybeans, they've been on both sides of unchanged. Now, November beans yesterday closed below the 200-day moving average for the first time since August of 2020. And not only closed below, but traded below for the first time in that span. So that's quite negative from a technical perspective, but not seeing a whole lot of follow-through selling today.
Wow. I did not realize that we had crossed that path. More pressure on the hog market.
Yeah, you know, it's slight to moderate pressure there, but you know, the cash index is down slightly this morning, and yet the futures are outpacing those losses in the cash. So, just continues to be a very pessimistic attitude by the hog traders moving forward. So, we are seeing, like I said, the cash index and the pork product market soften, but the futures are well below where the cash index is. Cattle market trading with a mixed to mostly firmer tone, both live cattle and feeder cattle so far this morning.
Yeah, some support in the back month contracts, both feeders and live. Thank you, Brian. That's Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
Oh, because of the shipping constraints, perhaps. Maybe?
Well, I'm looking. I am looking. I can't. No, wouldn't have. No.
Sure.
I don't know.
We forget the shipping containers. We just send it down to the Gulf by mule, I think.
By mule?
I think is what he's getting at. Yeah, maybe. Beasts of burden.
Okay. All right. Well,
he's
let's
got it.
Find out.
He's got it.
Let's see if you're right and bring in NCGA CEO John Doggett. John, welcome back to AgriTalk. How are you?
I'm great, you know, with one exception, and that is the loss of Charlie Watts, the longtime and only drummer for the Rolling Stones.
For the Rolling Stones.
And, you know, it's a sad, sad day, but, you know, the band continues on. The show will not stop, and they're going to start touring in a couple of weeks. They're going to start in St. Louis. And if anybody from St. Louis has an extra ticket, you know how to get a hold of me.
You know, I heard that you were a roadie for the Stones when they first started. Is that true?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't put that on my resume, but yeah.
Oh my gosh, John.
I was a roadie for somebody somewhere sometime back in my misspent youth.
Oh, you know what? That would not surprise me at all. Not at all. Oh, hey, as long as we're having a little bit of fun, did you make it over to Dyersville for the Field of Dreams game?
Oh, you're hurting me now. You know, I went to Reagan International Airport. I came up to the American Airlines counter to check my bag and get my ticket to go to the game. And they said, sir, we're really sorry, but that flight's been canceled. And so is the following flight and the one after that. And so, you know, what we had then was we had a grown man laying on the floor sobbing uncontrollably, and somebody else got my ticket. No, I didn't get to go. Thanks for bringing it up. you know how to hurt a guy, don't you, Chip?
Oh my gosh! Hey, I had no idea that happened.
Right.
I didn't. Oh man, John, I am sorry to. Yeah, rub a little salt in that wound. Good grief!
Yeah. The only way it could have been worse is if you got my ticket. No, it was. I'm going to tell you what you want to talk about, a great event. My mom lives in a retirement home, independent living, not a nursing home, independent living facility in Helena, Montana. And I swear to God, I'm sure she had every single little old lady and little old man gathered around the television sets there to watch it. But yeah, I have had more people, some people I haven't talked to in 10, 15 years, get a hold of me and say, you know what, that was just amazing. And, you know, what a great deal. What a great deal.
Yeah, it really wasn't. It left the impression that I think organizers hoped it would leave, didn't it?
It did. What we've heard from Major League Baseball is, they knew the game would come off without a hitch. They knew all of these things would happen, but I don't think they anticipated the emotional aspect of that game was so significant. And it was just so nice. And we all needed something else to think about besides COVID and politics and everything else. And when those guys came out of that cornfield, you know, it just stirred something in folks, and that was great. Yep. And good to showcase corn and all the great things that farmers do.
Okay. All right. Well, it was nice to not talk about politics for a little bit, but now we're going to talk about politics. So the tax issues in President Biden's proposal, are you comfortable that the step up in basis and the estate tax exemptions are settled and won't make their way back into that reconciliation bill?
Yeah, it's not done until it's done. That's why we're going to continue to push and continue to push and continue to push. You know, part of me says, hey, they're going to leave it in there as trading fodder for something else later on. But you can't leave that to chance. Both of those provisions would be a significant blow to people's ability to pass on their farm or any other business to their kids and their grandkids. And so we're going to continue to push. I've been really, really pleased. We are well over 6,200 contacts by corn growers to members of Congress about this issue. It's one of the biggest ones that we've ever had. And those calls are still being made this morning. So I'm real happy that we're, you know, we're getting our message across. We are hearing from folks on Capitol Hill. Hey, we're hearing you. We know this is a big concern of yours. So, but we can't stop now. We have to continue to push on this right up until the end. And it's not the end yet.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I think one of the things that you've got working on your side on this is if somehow, some way, they would get back into that reconciliation bill, there are many Democrat representatives that would feel betrayed by that action, wouldn't they?
Oh, absolutely. And the other thing is that we have, I think, an appropriate number today of Democrats who say that if either one of these provisions are in the final bill, that they won't pass it. They won't vote to pass it. And the margins are so narrow. It only takes a handful of folks to go ahead and move on this. And I think we're going to be all because no Republicans are going to go over on that side.
Right.
And I know we have some Democrats will be with us, but you know, you've got to double count the votes and diligence.
Yep, exactly. Okay. President Biden, when he was a candidate, he really delivered a strong message on biofuels. Is he still committed to biofuels and ethanol?
We will have a conversation with the administrator in the next week or two about that. But, you know, I think we've all said, glad to hear what candidate Biden had to say, but we're even more interested in what President Biden will produce.
Right.
Proof will be in the pudding. The support, we'll know whether they support biofuels or not when the announcements come out.
Yeah. What's your gut tell you right now? Are they going to support the RFS? Let's start there.
Well, I mean, they've stated over and over again that they're going to support the RFS, and the RFS calls for 15 billion gallons of renewable fuels in our nation's fuel supply by this year, and 15 billion gallons is 15 billion gallons. You know, 12.5 is not 15, 14.2 is not 15, 15 is 15.
Yep, absolutely. The UN... its Food Systems Summit starts Thursday. What are your hopes for that summit, John?
I tell you what, Chip, I've spent more time on that issue than just about any other particular issue that we've been working with for the last few months. I am really encouraged what Secretary Vilsack has said, and you know, his first public speech in person was to the U.S. Grains Council last month in Des Moines, and he brought it up in very clear terms that if the Europeans want to go farm to fork, which is their goofy, crazy idea about how they're supposedly going to raise food for their continent, if they want to do that, fine. That's not what the U.S. is going to do. The U.S. is going to use the technologies that are available and the technologies that will become available. That you, if you, in order to be able to feed people and in order to preserve our environment, we have to use technology. If the Europeans want to run away from that, well, that's their problem. But I feel a real commitment on the part of the U.S. Delegation that's going to be there that they will push hard to keep some of this craziness away from our shores. But, you know, there's a lot of players in this thing and a lot of people pushing a lot of bad information on some folks that want to do the right thing. And so our job is to continue to show what technology has done to enable agriculture to feed people and do the right thing by the environment. And that's a great story to tell. We can tell that story every single day, all day long. And I'm very hopeful and I'm optimistic that will be the message from the U.S. government.
Okay. Awesome. The farm to fork, policy or plan in Europe. When I look at it, the thing that it lacks the most of is security, right? From one year to the next, that you're going to have an adequate food supply, right?
Yeah, I mean, and there's part of me that says, I hope they embrace farm to fork. We could sell more food to them.
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah, that little bit of a hormone. Yeah, that little hormone issue on beef would probably go away in a hurry if they would run into a production issue.
Yeah, yeah. They're right now they're fat, dumb, and happy, and maybe after a while they won't be fat. I mean, you've got to take care of production agriculture utilizing the technologies that are available. These were things that were well thought out and well embraced, and even our environmental colleagues, around the country, they're all also expressing some concerns about this. They understand that GMO technology has been good for the planet, and I think the narrative is good. And again, we're optimistic, but we're going to have to see how this thing plays out. But it isn't going to be a one and done. This thing will be going on for years, We'll just have to continue to fight it for years.
Okay. Well, I tell you what, we'll get you on soon and get your reaction to what takes place on Thursday. Okay.
Absolutely.
Great. Thank you, John. That is John Doggett. He is the CEO of the National Corn Growers Association. We'll be back to wrap things up on AgriTalk here in a moment.
The truth is hard to come by these days unless you listen to AgriTalk.
Welcome back to AgriTalk, everyone. Thank you so much for tuning in this morning. Davis Michelson here with Chip Flory standing by, waiting in the wings, lurking, if you will.
Always.
A couple of great conversations. We started with former Iowa Secretary of Agriculture and USDA Undersecretary Bill Northey. Mm-hmm. And then on to John Doggett from the National Corn Growers Association. There were just a couple of news items that we didn't get to. I want to talk about some of the things that we talked about today, but can I hit these news items quick? Because they kind of work together.
Absolutely.
Let's start here. Newly arriving vessels are adding to a record-breaking flotilla waiting to unload cargo at the ports of Los Angeles, and Long Beach has surpassed 70 vessels in recent days, according to the Marine Exchange of Southern California. Chip, before the pandemic, it was said to be unusual for more than one ship to wait for a berth. The growth of the backlog shows that shipping lines and cargo owners are effectively boxed in, and the thing is, heads up, everybody, and maybe this sounds silly to talk about in mid-September, but Christmas is coming. And if there's something that you're trying to get, something special for that special someone in your life, you might want you might want to hook into it now.
Yeah, if you see it, you might want to just go ahead and pick that up.
Just go ahead and pick it up. Because
don't Griswold it, though, and forget where you hit it.
Now, that's good advice. That's good advice. See, I always put things in like special places so I don't forget where they are. And then it turns out the place is so special that I don't even remember where it is. Yeah. It's a real problem in my life.
Right. You know, but we talk about the lack of containers and the demand for containers.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody, you know, part of the question is, where did they all go? Mm-hmm. It's not that they went someplace. It's that they are all in use, and our efficiency in unloading those containers is gone because of the labor issues.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's crazy.
Well, and this is somewhat related. U.S. parcel shipping rates are going up faster than they have in nearly a decade. FedEx is hiking its prices an average of 5.9% next year across most of its services, this according to the Wall Street Journal. Chip, that's the first time in 8 years that the carrier or their rival UPS, that's United Parcel Service, has strayed from their lockstep annual increases of 4.9%. The hefty increase signals that FedEx has strong confidence that the red-hot demand for package shipping driven by e-commerce will extend into next year. I'll say it again. If there's something you need to get shipped in, ship it in. Let's get it done. Yeah. You best hustle.
Yeah, and it's not all that unusual to see a FedEx truck driving down the road on a Sunday now.
Yes, I've seen that too.
They do Sunday deliveries because they can't get everything done in the work week. It just is unbelievable the amount of demand that's out there. And again, some of the labor issues are slowing down the process and taking some of the efficiency out of the game.
All right. So, yeah, shipping's a problem. It's going to continue to be a problem. It'll be expensive and difficult, cumbersome.
Right.
Even.
Right.
Moving on.
Okay.
John Doggett, you and he kind of started to go down a little bit of a rabbit trail on this farm to fork concept.
Yeah.
I'd like to hear a little more.
Okay. Let's see. Let's start with this. We talk about the Green New Deal and how the Build Back Better plan is really an extension of the Green New Deal.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there is a European Green Deal out there, and it's one of the key components is the farm to fork plan or strategy. And the whole thing there is designed for the European Union's food system to reach the EU's target of climate neutrality by the year 2050. So it's a new system that includes, strict reductions in fertilizer use, an increase in organically farmed area, and great goals, great strategies, no security. No security.
Right.
If you do this, if you go down that path and you have an off year on production, what does that mean for you in the next year? We're getting to the point that we don't have enough people that remember what it was like to be hungry.
Right.
Okay. So they look at stuff like this and they think, okay, that's fine. We can deal with that. And if we have one year that's a little off, well, you know, it's a little off. No. You can't do that. You can't do that in this environment. It also wants to use its power, okay, to force and enforce sustainability standards with its trading partners.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So, in other words, this is kind of like Prop 12 out of California. You want to play in this pool? Then you got to play by our rules. And those rules that they are looking at putting in place, my opinion, puts the entire world's food supply at risk.
Mm-hmm.
John said it so well. We've got the technology. We know how to use the technology. And we know how to use that technology to improve the environment, I still can't wrap my head around how populations look at GMOs and they immediately connect that to the old evil empire of Monsanto.
Mm-hmm.
And they look at that and they just cannot get that out of their head. They see GMO and they see the devil all at the same time. They need to look at GMO and look at the technological advancements that it has allowed and the sustainability that it brings to the table in agriculture. And if they would do that, I think they'd be a lot more secure in their food supply going forward. Hey, wow, we are out of time. Thank you so much for listening this morning.
Yeah.
Come back this afternoon. We've got Naomi Bloom from Total Farm Marketing right here on AgriTalk. Tomorrow morning, Chuck Grassland.